Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 116, recorded on February 3rd, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, and everything in between. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. How's it going?
It's going good.
Excellent. And hey, how about that timing? My power came back just in time for the show.
The way it should be.
Exactly.
Yep. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, still?
I'm all hopped up on Swiss chocolate.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Do you mind sending me some of that?
Brings Swiss chocolate to Macworld.
Oh, I probably could have gotten
Swiss
some of that.
Chocolate, that's the name I used to dance under.
The real stuff from Switzerland, you know?
Yep.
Straight from the source.
So all right.
I've just been mainlining that stuff.
Oh, man, I wish I had some chocolate now.
It's good. Good stuff.
So we've been, before we started the show properly, we were complaining about everything. And so I think the first thing we should start off with is the thing that we probably all want to complain about, right? The daily?
No, I love it.
Okay, so
what do you mean complain?
Well, let's get into it. The daily, the iPad-specific news service from News Corp was announced, was it yesterday? Day before Wednesday. It was Wednesday the 2nd.
It was Wednesday.
That was yesterday.
Yep.
As we record this, of course.
Yes. And so it's essentially what we thought it would be. It's a specific tablet news outlet, and they have an iPad application. It's currently free for 2 weeks, sponsored by Verizon. And I don't know. It's not that interesting. Adam, since you like it, let's talk about what you like first, and then we'll...
Well, I mean, for example, today they featured the ass hat.
The what?
The ass hat. You don't know about the ass hat?
No, tell me more.
You didn't listen to No Tech, did you? No. This was coined by John Foster on No Tech, and I did not notice this, but at Macworld there was a product, and I think this is in the, I don't know where it is in the daily right now, but I saw it there today. I think it might be in the arts and leisure section or the apps and games section. I can't remember. It's a hat, a baseball hat with a very long brim. Okay. Imagine like a, I don't know, 2.5 foot brim on your baseball cap. And then around that brim is a like skirt, like privacy screen. And then about halfway to the middle, there is a Fresnel lens, like magnifier. And then all the way at the end of the bill is a little pocket that you can put your iPhone or your iPod Touch in. And it's for watching movies. like hands free, and get this, the marketing for these guys was, it's specifically targeted at watching porn.
Yeah,
so no one can notice. And you're hands free.
Okay. Well, hands free, yeah, that's important.
All right, so they were at CES too, and as I walked past their booth at CES, they said, "Hey, do you want to try this out?" And I said, "No," and just kept walking. Although I did sneak back later so I could get a photo of someone wearing the ass hat.
And the name, I got to tell you, explain the name. So the URL for this product, if anybody wants to check it out, is As Seen on TV Hat. So it's ASS hat, basically. So obviously no one paid attention to their URL. Anyway,
no,
sorry, but back to the daily. So the daily's featuring the ass hat today. So that's cool in and of itself. But no, I mean, the thing itself, I thought it was very well designed. I thought the articles were really good.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the asshats still.
No. I'm back to the daily. What I like about the daily is the quality of the content is really good. The pictures are amazing. The app works very well. It was pretty intuitive as far as, you know, I've played with it for about a day and a half.
I disagree on that, but continue.
Really? What don't you like about it? I thought the pricing was reasonable.
Okay, so yeah, the pricing's reasonable. The navigation, well, first of all, my biggest complaint about really any application that does this is that you can't see the status bar in this application. You can't see the clock, you can't see your battery, you can't see anything at the top. I don't know why they did that. It's not like they actually need that extra 20 pixels or whatever. And then I really thought that the carousel thing is incredibly gimmicky and doesn't work very well.
The carousel mode?
Yeah. I found that to be kind of jumpy when I tried to move through it.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
You know, and Michael, I agree with you. I don't get why they didn't leave the status bar visible.
Because you can see it in the carousel mode that you don't like.
No, you can't.
You can see the time in the weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
That's stupid. All they could have. Okay. Whatever.
You know, there's. I think
that doesn't bother me.
from an eye candy standpoint or a visually pleasing standpoint, it is a visually pleasing app. There are some interface things that I question.
Yeah.
But overall, as long as they can provide good content, I think this will be a well-received application.
Okay.
If the big selling point for the daily is that it's an iPad exclusive news thing, then they might as well pack up and go home now. If they don't have the content, I don't care how pretty the interface is.
Yeah. About my two biggest complaints. I'm kind of with you on some of the things that you mentioned. I don't mind that the status bar stuff at the top going away because I want to have a magazine or a newspaper style experience. And so I didn't even notice that.
Sure.
Really. You know, I'm kind of looking at it and trying to go through it.
Well, there's another thing I would like to mention that I don't like about it is, I mean, some of this stuff I feel like will definitely go away and be improved, but I kind of feel like we were led to believe that this was some really high quality application, like right out of the gate from, you know, News Corp was working side by side with Apple for months and months with millions and millions of dollars. And it just didn't seem like it was ready to be announced as far as just the application itself. Now, I'm not speaking about the content at all because so far I've read a couple articles and I do enjoy that. Stuff like, you know, really glitchy scrolling between pages. And things that aren't as apparent as they should be, such as, you know, tapping the
tapping the logo
right.
to get back.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That kind of thing was like, that's kind of dumb.
I had to watch the video figure out how to navigate the app.
Yeah,
but
me
once
too.
I watched it, I went, oh, okay, now I know.
Right, right.
Really?
I do like the fact that, you know, I mentioned with the Wired application how you could never tell which way you were supposed to scroll through an article or a specific piece. So far, the Daily has that locked down because for the most part, it's going to be horizontal scrolling. But if there is a vertical scroll, then it has a little arrow that says, hey, scroll down. And so, that works pretty well. There are some weird things, such as if you tap on a video to start. So you have a big play button. Cool. That indicates, obviously, that it's a video that can be played. But you can't scrub through it. There's a little scrubber dot. You know how you can move back and forth through a video? That doesn't work at all. All it does is moves the page, which is irritating. Of course, you can full screen it, and then the scrubber works because it's using the native player. I would say overall, the bugginess of the application at this big launch kind of put me off to it immediately.
I don't know. I guess I didn't. I mean, I noticed a few of those things. They didn't really bother me.
You're not as crazy about user experience as I am. I'm psycho about it. So I definitely say that this is my issue that I need to get past. But I feel like there are some legitimate problems with it right now. And although I do feel like they'll probably solve it very quickly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it seemed to flow and scroll and stuff like that fairly well for me. I mean, occasionally there was a little pause, but yeah, I don't know.
I think I'm being more sensitive to the sluggishness than I would be with other apps, simply because there's been all the hype about Apple being directly involved in helping with the design of this.
Exactly. Same with me. I would not be nearly as concerned about it if it wasn't hyped that Apple was involved with this stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of coverage about all the snowfall.
Well, that is one of my complaints is that, I mean, it really is a daily publication in the fact that, I mean, like today, I can't go back and get stories from yesterday.
Right.
I specifically book, you can add them to, you can bookmark them. You can like save them off. You can clip them. There's a feature like that in there, but I don't think you can just go back and get yesterday's stories.
So I don't think there's a way to do that either.
Yeah. So if you saw something yesterday and you want to go back and reread it, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah. The navigation of this application just doesn't seem to have been thought out.
Now, I also noticed every time I launch the app, it reloads all the content.
Yeah.
So I think I need to pop it into airplane mode and see what content's still there.
I don't think it will work.
Well, we're about to find out.
Would be my guess.
All right. So I'm completely quitting the application. And going into airplane mode, maybe.
Yeah, no, it definitely works. I just did it. Anything that you download, you've already downloaded, does work.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure about video, though. I'm going to give that a try. Yeah, videos are unavailable while offline. So it does have offline support, which is good.
It has crashed a couple times on me. I'll tell you that.
It crashed on them at the event.
Yeah, it did.
Whoops.
Yeah. I think it's... I don't know what's going on under the hood. My guess is that it's really pushing the limits of the iPad. I mean, there's kind of a lot going on.
Yeah, and I do like some of the transitions. You know, there on some of the pages, it starts off... It looks like a magazine photograph with text and stuff over it and some nice compositing going on. But then the image will start moving and kind of panning out and zooming out. And that's a neat effect.
Yes.
But I think, it's free for 2 weeks. Go get it. Try it out. See if you like it. If it's for you, it's only $1 a week. So
one feature I liked, did you notice in the carousel, it'll come up and it'll show you what pages you've already read or viewed?
I did not notice that.
Yeah, that comes up underneath. That was kind of a nice touch, I thought. The pricing, though. I mean, I was surprised by the pricing. And I think if the content stays good, I noticed some of the shorter articles, I wish there was a little more meat to them, the sort of feature articles, there seems to be 3 or 4 feature articles every day. Those were pretty good. Like there was a good one today on the White Stripes thing. Although it still was only, I think, maybe a page and a half of text. Maybe you don't need more than that for that story, but
yeah. I really wish there was a way to, is there a way to filter only, like if you only want news, because I don't care about gossip and I don't care about sports and I don't want to read about applications because I don't care what they have to say about them.
There's not. And you know what else? I didn't notice if there, I don't think there's any search. Which is kind of interesting.
It just seems like this is an incomplete application. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's 1.0. I don't know. Maybe I'm more willing to forgive on 1.0. You know, I like the things like the integrated Twitter feeds. Like I know, like on one of the sports pages, they had tweets about the athlete. I'm not exactly sure how they're doing that. That was kind of clever, I thought.
Yeah, that was neat.
So they're, you know, they're pulling in live data in some cases. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the horoscope.
I really wish I could get rid of some of
these. It does have the crossword in the Sudoku puzzle every day, which is kind of neat.
With Game Center support.
Oh, cool.
So, I don't know. For a 1.0, it seemed pretty polished to me. Maybe I was more impressed. I know I was more impressed than both of you.
I think I'm more impressed than Michael.
Okay, I hate it
but,
now.
But clearly far less impressed than you, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, so now the developers listening know who to give free applications to. Not me and Jeff, I guess. Although I do like free applications.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I want this periodical thing to work. You know.
Oh, I definitely want it to work, too.
I want it to work.
Yeah. So maybe I'm putting some of that hope into it. What I really want is I want to get, for a nominal additional fee, I want to be able to have a print and a digital. I don't know if that will be part of the subscription plan. But did you guys read through I read through the whole entire section on, because the terms of service on iTunes changed.
Right, yeah.
Because of this. And
because
I read
of the subscription
through the whole
stuff.
Section on the subscription details, and there were some interesting things in there.
Like what?
Well, they're gonna share your information.
Oh,
which was kind of a point of contention for Apple. But how did they say it? They said they put it in a really specific way, saying that the app will ask for your permission to give your name, address, and or zip code to the publisher. And then it said, sort of once you agree to that, you've agreed to the publisher's privacy policy, and it's basically your responsibility to understand that privacy policy and to look it up in the app. And I think for all publications, that information is going to have to be in the app itself, is the way the language made it sound. Hmm. So there needs to be like a TOS in the app.
Interesting.
And for the daily, if you go into the account information, you can see that they have the privacy policy and user license agreement and the terms of service in the app. Here's a UI thing that did bug me. If you try and access that information in landscape mode, it's below the fold and you can't scroll down to it. It just springs back down. You got to put it into portrait mode.
Yeah, there does seem to be a lot of those sorts of bugs. But yeah. Did you guys see that someone spotted what seems to be an iPad 2 at the Daily News event?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, they say that they saw an iPad. Someone from Reuters says that they saw what appeared to be a working model, the next iPad with a front-facing camera at the top edge. Obviously, they didn't get
fake
any photos.
Fake.
Really?
Fake.
Oh,
Apple's not going to let one of those in the wild at the
event. Yeah. There's no way that there was a second gen iPad at that event, and if there, and even with the remotest chance that there was, there's no way that it was out where anyone could see it.
Right.
It would be one of those things where they take the select couple journalists that they really love, pull them aside and go, check this out. You can't talk about it.
Right.
And that would have been it. There's no way that was out and visible.
Yeah. It's too bad they didn't drop any rumors about the resolution of this thing that they didn't see. You know, because according to, I think it's PC World, they're getting information that we will not be seeing a Retina display type iPad for the next version anyway. They say that we're going to see that on iPad 3, simply because manufacturing a display of that size at that resolution is just not practical right now.
I completely believe that.
Yeah. That does make sense. Although, it's interesting that they... Do you think that they're going to be producing a display of that resolution right now with the iPad 2 not even having been released or announced?
I don't think they need it.
No.
Honestly. I mean, in reading through the daily, and I'll also mention that I also downloaded Macworld's app, which is pretty nice as well, just as an aside.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been reading a lot more because of those things on my iPad and showing it to people. And the comment I almost get every single time is, wow, that looks amazing.
You know, I have to say that I've been reading a lot more, too, on my iPad. And I'm regularly noticing that the resolution, it seems to be a little low and kind of hurts my eyes at some point. That's after some extended reading, I start noticing the pixels. But you think you're not noticing as much. You probably
not
have,
when I hold it at a normal distance. I mean, sure. If I got it way up, crammed up against my face, but
see, that might be the problem
with
me.
Comfortable for me about arm's length.
Yeah, the issue with me is that it's probably because I have bad vision and it's much closer to my face. So maybe that's the issue, and it doesn't really matter.
Well, because I think, like the iPhone, it makes a huge difference, but most of the time I'm with my iPhone, it's much closer.
Sure,
You're kind of holding it up to your face to look at it because everything's kind of smaller. But with the iPad, I kind of hold it further back, and, I like the apps. Oh, here's my one major complaint about the daily. You can't adjust the text size.
Ugh. Yeah.
That they need to fix.
Because
it would be rather small. I mean, I have pretty good eyes and I can read it okay, but I mean, somebody else who's older, they're not going to be able to read some of the text on some of those articles because it's just the font size is just too small.
Yeah. Well, did you guys hear that? I think it was according to Apple Insider, instead of having a pixel doubled display, the next iPad will be a little bit thinner, and more importantly, will have an anti-reflective coating on it, which I think might be even more significant than having a pixel doubled resolution. Because if anyone who has an iPad and has had to try and read either in an environment with bright lights or outside, it's very difficult to see in some angles, and you really have to work to make sure that you don't get that reflection. And honestly, the only reason I don't use one of those screen protectors that offer anti-glare is because it kind of magnifies the pixels a little bit. But otherwise, I honestly would prefer to have something like that on my iPad.
There was one vendor at Macworld who was getting a lot of people coming because they were selling those screen protectors for like $10. True Power.
Oh, I missed seeing that.
Yeah, and I might get one now because I didn't see it till after the show. We were out to dinner, and somebody had come specifically down because it was $10 at the show to get one of the films from these guys, and it was nice. I mean, it looked really nice.
Did you get any rainbowing? I noticed on the ones that
It was one of the better ones that I've seen.
Oh, nice, okay, nice. Cool.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we should probably talk about Macworld and all this, because you guys were at Macworld, was it last week or the week before?
Wait, Macworld was last week.
Okay, yeah, so you guys were at Macworld. I was not. I was here stuck in the cold and the snow, and you were in lovely San Francisco. You got to see all the cool stuff at the Moscone Center. And,
right.
You guys want to talk about, you want to mention a couple significantly neat things that you guys saw? Maybe, Jeff, you want to start?
Sure. And I'm trying to think of the really cool things that I saw. One thing that I saw that's not out yet, but will be in the next few weeks. that I think is going to be cool. What's the company name? HyperMac, the people that make the Mac Juice chargers. They have a hard drive that they're about to release that has a little bridge chip in it that tricks your iPad into thinking it's a camera card.
Oh,
so you can have up to a terabyte of storage. So you can load a buttload of movies and photos on this thing, more than your iPad can hold, and then just import from the hard drive what you want to watch and then delete it when you're done.
Oh, now that sounds awesome.
And it also works as a regular hard drive, so you can use it with your computer too.
You know what's funny about that? As they were demoing it, I didn't know this, but I guess if you had because most SD cards or whatever don't make folders or subfolders.
But yeah, it does the folder thing.
Yeah, but it's weird. It's weird how you access it on the iPad. So you dock it in, and what you see is you see the folders, and you select the folder. But then the button on the iPad says import all, but you don't really import anything. You click the import button, and then it kind of imports the folder structure information, and then gives you the next view of what everything that's in that folder.
So they
you
have
can
to
kind of drill down. Yeah,
I'm assuming that interface funkery is a side effect of the way Apple handles SD cards.
Yeah.
Well, most because it's supposed to be importing from a camera, right? And I don't know any camera that actually creates subfolders. You always have that one folder that all the images get dumped in.
Right.
Right. The DCIM folder or whatever it is. Is that right?
Yeah.
What it's called most of the time.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. I mean, there might be other folders on the SD card, but yeah, that's the one that always has the photos, and that's the one that all your import devices will look for.
So yeah, is the device an adapter, or is it a specific hard drive?
It's a hard drive, and it looks just like a regular hard drive. The difference is that it has some chip inside the case that handles that little bit of trickery to make it appear as if it's an SD card.
Very cool.
And it actually has two USB ports on it. One for connecting to your iPad, mm-hmm. which would be where the magic chip is, and the other for connecting to your Mac, where then it acts just like any regular hard drive.
Gotcha. Yeah, you can check that out at hypershop.com. That's a neat idea. They have a bunch of different sizes for it. Looks like they have 320, 500 gig, 640, 750, 1 terabyte.
Yeah, they're a little bit pricey compared to regular portable hard drives.
Right. Okay. Well,
not regular portable hard drives.
Yeah, you can actually just get the case for it itself. It's $100 for the case, and then you can dump your own hard drive in there.
Yep.
Cool. Adam, did you see any cool iPhone, iPad stuff?
One of them is my pick.
Okay, well, you can skip that one and tell us that one later.
Oh, I can tell you one that's not my pick, but that's really cool, and I'm thinking about maybe getting. There was this company called Ubiq, like ubiquitous, Y-O-U-B-I-Q, and they had this product called the Gimbal, which was this really cool, it was a custom iPhone 4 case along with a, it's kind of does three different things. What looks like a pistol grip mount, if anybody knows what that is, for like a camera. So the iPhone case kind of locks onto this pistol grip mount and to give you better ability to steady the iPhone when you're taking pictures. And then sort of tucked in the handle of that pistol grip mount are two aluminum legs that can pop out and become a little desktop tripod for the iPhone.
Mm.
Okay.
But then more importantly, where it connects onto the whole assembly is a gimbal mount head that allows you to line up the lens of your iPhone 4 exactly over the pivot point of the whole assembly, both vertically and horizontally, so that you can take like perfect panoramic photos iPhone, because it's like a nodal point for the iPhone camera.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and they have an app that I think is $2.99 that will help you get the right overlap. And they had some gorgeous, like, huge blown up. They had a photographer, you know, a panoramic photographer, go out and shoot these gorgeous panos with all with the iPhone 4. And I think the whole thing, I want to say it was about, I think it was $70 for the case and the little gimbal mount thing. So
that's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, considering some cases can be $40 just in and of themselves very easily. So I thought it was a pretty good deal and pretty neat. And they were just kind of off to the side. A lot of people that I ran into didn't even really notice them. So,
you know, that's actually a problem I had with the expo this year. I mean, overall, I loved it. I think it was a really good show, but mm-hmm. the far aisles, the ones at either end of the expo hall, the way they were set up, I didn't realize they were there.
And yeah, it was crowded. I mean, this was kind of the same problem last year where they moved it to a smaller hall or what felt like a smaller hall, but because there was sort of the same number of people getting into individual booths or just getting up and down the aisles was kind of, I mean, Macworld's always crowded, but it just seems now that they've moved to the kind of smaller halls that you're jammed in there a little bit more, especially on the edges. Kind of in the center, people spread out. There's a little more room with the larger booths and things like that. But when you're in those little tiny, what are they, 10 by 10s? Is that what they are?
Yeah, something like that.
10 by 20s, the smaller booth areas and are kind of jammed in there. Yeah, so I'd agree. You kind of can't get in and see stuff.
Yeah, and actually, you know, those two outer rows, just the way everything's set up, I didn't even see them. And it wasn't until, on the last day, when you walked into the hall, so the far right end, that's the aisle that the Tuwa booth was in. And I completely missed it, except that Kelly from Tuwa happened to be one aisle over, saw me, and said, "Oh, hey, come over to the booth for a minute." And I followed her around the corner, and I was like, "Wah, this is magic. Did I walk into Diagon Alley or something?"
Yeah. There's another cool thing that I'm kind of excited about checking out as iPad case and mounting system. From Vogels, I think is how you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah. That's the one where they have all of the, this like the standard adapter that plugs into the back of the case and then all the other pieces so you can attach it to different things.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it's a hard shell back case for the iPad that has this like round ring inset in it. And that ring adapts to all kinds of different mounts that the company sells for doing different things. So there's a wall mount. There's a table stand. So if you want to, you know, set it up like a picture frame. There's a car mount that actually is a really cool system that slides over. If your car has the headrest with just the two posts that kind of stick down, it slides over top of that and gives you an adapter for that so you can mount it in the back of the car. There's a kind of a flex mount or like an arm that you can put on the wall. So if you had it in your kitchen and you wanted to do it for recipes or something like that, you can kind of pull away from the wall. And so what's cool about it is that unlike some of the other systems I saw for doing similar things is once you have the base kit, when you want to expand, well, if you need another one for another car, you just get another car mount in the same iPad, just docks, you know, clicks in and clicks out pretty easily out of the system. So it seemed really versatile to me. And I think the base kit, it was a little on the pricey side. Well, I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. The base kit came with a wall holder, a wall mount, the table stand, and the car mount, plus the iPad case for, I think, $120. And then, obviously, additional mounts are cheaper.
Yeah, I regularly think about how fun it would be to have some kind of mount for my iPad. You know, a whole bunch of mounts just around the house where I'd usually use my iPad where I can just pop it in and do my thing.
Yeah. And that's what this system was for. So I thought that was one of the better ones. I'd been looking for a good solution, and most of the problems with a lot of them is that, you know, they don't adapt, or you've got to spend a lot more on accessories. What I liked about this system was that it was clean, it was elegant, it was well designed, and it was expandable pretty easily. So,
yeah, that was a pretty cool setup, and yeah. And that little universal plug mount piece, the adapter,
the Ringo
piece, it held really well. So it wasn't like I would be worried if I put one of these in my car that going over bumps, my iPad is going to go flying off the seat.
Yeah. Then everybody was excited about the IK multimedia stuff, the whole iRig thing. Not iRig. What's the mic one that lets
you... Oh, yeah, the iRig mic.
iRig mic. You know, that mic, I'm sorry, I don't think it sounds that great. The mic, the software is amazing. It's a really great app, and the device that lets you plug the microphone into the iPad is really cool. Being an audio guy, you know, I listened to a couple recordings, and I didn't think the mic sounded that great. It's okay, but I didn't think it was spectacular.
It looks kind of cheap.
It felt kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. So that was one of those things that I saw where I went, I can see where this is going to be really useful to people that want to have a portable podcasting studio, if you will, yep. On a budget.
Yep. Yeah, it's perfect for that. But more exciting from them, I think, was and they used them at the Cirque du Mac event, the iPad stand that clips to your mic stand.
Yeah.
The iPad mount.
Yeah, that's really cool.
For musicians, what is that called? It's from IK Multimedia. I can look it up. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, I can't
remember iClip.
Oh, the iClip?
Yeah.
Yes. That was cooler, I thought, than the actual mic thing. And they have a system that goes in for guitars called the iRig, and that was pretty cool as well, with all kinds of pedal and guitar and amp effects that you can do on your iPad. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Now, I saw... And this isn't going to sound as cool as the other things, but I saw some gloves that I liked. Actually, I'm going to start testing one of the styles, and I just forgot the name of the company. I want to say Free Fingers, Freestyle, something like that. Well, crap, now I can't remember what it was, but the gloves seem to be a higher quality than what I've seen at what I saw at Macworld last year. And they have gloves where they have, the inductive material on the fingertips. And then they also have gloves, one of the pairs I'm trying out, where they're actually Thinsulate lined, and the index finger and thumb tip flip back. And then they have magnets to hold them out of the way while you're working with your iPhone.
Oh, neat.
And it's going to drive me nuts because now I can't remember the name of that company.
Well, if you remember, we can later on put them in the show notes.
Right. And, well, I think I have a tag or a card from them somewhere still. So I'll go dig it up after the show.
Cool.
The iPad erection stand from Rain won the best of show.
Oh, that was awesome. And I'm certain no one in their PR, there's not a single person in their PR department that looked at that and went, it's a giant iPad erection stand.
Rain Design makes cool stuff. I'm sorry. We shouldn't tease them, but the marketing photo for this thing would just cracked me up.
Okay, they have it's something the eye rest, right?
Yeah. It's a stand that you can put in your lap and use your iPad. And like a lot of the Rain stuff, I'm sure it's incredibly well built. And
yeah,
solid
it looks pretty classy.
Like
I did play with the stand, probably poor choice of words. Anyhow, I did play with the stand at their booth, not on my lap, just on a table. Uh-huh. And it held my iPad in its Apple case really well. And I was actually typing on it. And it wasn't bouncing around like I expected it would. So
it's nice and sturdy.
It's nice and sturdy, which I guess it better be if it's going to be used to prop up your penis.
Yeah, they need to rethink the marketing photo, but otherwise that was kind of neat. Everybody's all excited about those Fling things as well, the 10-1 little joystick controllers.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's because I don't play that many of those types of games. But, I mean, it's a neat thing. It's a neat little you know, product in terms of its innovation or it's innovative. It glides really nicely, but I didn't notice when I was using it that it made the controls all that much better, at least for me.
Now,
like I didn't think it was an improvement over just putting my thumbs, that much of an improvement over just putting my thumbs on the screen.
If you play a game on an iPhone or an iPad for any extended period of time, your fingers, you know, initially you'll have a really good glide across the screen that makes it very easy to use. But mm-hmm. after a little while, either because of friction or because of, you know, sweat or what have you, it does become a lot harder to do. And it's a little more, you know, if you're doing that with your thumb, for an extended period of time, it also kind of stresses your thumb in a really, uncomfortable way. Just because it's just a weird thing to be sliding your thumb back and forth in that.
They do glide really nicely.
Yeah.
I don't know what, it's a different material than what they use on the pens.
So it's not the little pom-pom thing?
No, it's not. It's something more solid.
You know, when I played with it, I really liked it. But yeah, keep in mind, nice. when I'm playing games that have those types of thumb controls, I have coordination issues. So it actually made it easier for me.
Yeah, I can imagine it would make it easier.
Need to. I played around kind of with a game that just had one on there. I thought it was a little bit pricey at $30 for what is just kind of a little plasticky thingy, but it was very popular.
I think I need to get one of those in and check it out because I don't play a lot of games, but I think if I had one of these, I would play games more often on my iPad, at least stuff like, you know, that have the dual controller things on them. But yeah. Should we talk about the Verizon iPhone pre-ordering?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of
Verizon's never going to get the iPhone. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the
excited.
Pre-orders for current Verizon customers have begun for the iPhone 4.
Started at 3 a.m. on the 3rd.
Yes. So we have information on data and voice plans, right? It's essentially the same as AT&T, except for, okay, so voice is $40, you get 450 minutes, $60 for 900, and they do have an unlimited voice plan for $70. Data, they have only two plans. The first one is unlimited for $30. Of course, AT&T does not have an unlimited plan now. And for an additional $20, you get 2 gigabytes plus on a mobile hotspot. So the mobile hotspot is not unlimited. It's limited to 2 gigabytes, but it's only another $20. There's also a $35 activation fee, I guess, for the mobile hotspot, which is kind of lame. Yeah.
I am just getting pissed at the fact that these guys think that we don't want to use data or want to give us data, make us pay through the nose for it, and then cap it at something that's completely unreasonable for doing the types of things that people are going to want to do.
Are you referring to the cap or the throttling that they're going to be doing to they say they're top 5% data users?
No, I wasn't even talking. I wasn't even getting to that. I was getting to the fact that 2 gigs on a hotspot, BFD.
It should be backwards. It should be the other way around.
If you want to watch any video or anything like that, in about a day and a half.
I think they realize that, though. I think the unlimited data on directly on the phone is a marketing thing. And having 2 gigabytes for mobile hotspot is a practicality thing for their network.
Well, I think that the unlimited data thing is temporary. And they'll do like AT&T did. And after a certain amount of time, they're going to switch to regular capped data plans, and who knows, they may not even grandfather people in like AT&T did.
I think they're required to as per the contracts. The only reason they do grandfathering, I think, is because of the contracts.
Oh
yeah,
well, good thing I'm not an attorney.
The The article on Mac Rumors, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but they said the Wall Street Journal updated their article to say exactly that, Jeff, that the guy at Verizon said it is temporary, the $30 unlimited is temporary, and that they will shift back to tiered pricing in the, quote, not too distant future.
How nice of them. Get it while you can.
Get it. Exactly. I think that was basically what they're saying is get it now because it ain't going to be around for long.
Right, right.
You know, the whole thing with capping the data for tethering may not be that big of a deal because they're throttling the speeds for the high-end users and they're doing all that other image and video compression. So how many people are really going to want to use that a lot?
Exactly. That's the point. Is they're going to go, hey, we're going to make the video, even if you can get it, look so crappy that you're not going to want to. Thanks.
Yeah.
that's exactly why I left Verizon. So Apple wouldn't let them cripple the phone, so they're going to cripple the network.
Do you really think that the so they're talking about how they have some optimization stuff that you guys alluded to that that they're going to be to aid in network performance, they're going to be doing some extra compression to videos and images as well as, you know, text. And, you know, in the case of text, it doesn't really matter because you're going to get the text either way. But it'll be interesting to see how much they compress video and images.
Well, they're saying it's
negligible,
not going to be noticeable. And then they turn around and say it'll be noticeable.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you've anybody who's watched a YouTube video, I mean, YouTube is already bad enough over 3G.
That's true. You know, that's
by itself, and they're gonna compress it more than that.
Well, have they actually said what specific things they will be compressing? Or is it just generally everything?
They said specifically video and photos and I think they said I don't remember if they said audio.
Well, the way I read that was if you're doing MMS, right? Not so much I'm not sure they're going to be able to do real-time compression of video and images and stuff like that for web pages, right? Because that would require a lot of processing on their end.
It's going through their pipes, through their servers at some point.
It would still require more processing. Even though it is going through their server, it would require more.
You set up a couple beefy videos, you know, video compression systems in the right place, and it's technically possible.
Sure.
I don't think it would be that difficult.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I have a feeling what's going to happen is that after about a month of use, there will be a bunch of iPhone owners that start complaining about how their slow Verizon data connection dropped to a crawl.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there were some early reviews from Macworld, TechCrunch, All Things D. I think John Gruber even got one, and Gadget. The general consensus is it's an iPhone 4, same as the AT&T one. Of course, it's running iOS 4.2.6, which has the special Verizon software, including the hotspot stuff. The mobile hotspot works well, but of course, if you're using hotspot or just data in general and you get a phone call, your data cuts out because of Verizon's network.
You know what? I didn't think that was going to be such a big issue. But now that you mentioned, anybody who has the hotspot is going to hate that.
Yep.
Answer the phone, it goes off. I hadn't thought
of that. Yeah.
Because there you are, you're checking your email or trying to look up something while you're on the phone with the client. Oh, wait, I can't.
I'll call you back, yeah.
Oh, man, that's
going to
suck.
Wait, hold on. Let me grab my AT&T iPhone because I still have a contract.
Yeah. Yeah, but they do say that they're getting significantly better call performance in those areas which suffer from poor call performance on AT&T's network. And they're also noting that download and upload speeds are significantly slower on Verizon than on AT&T. So I think All Things D said 46% faster on AT&T for downloads and 24% faster for uploads on AT&T than
Well, that would
Verizon.
Make sense because isn't Verizon's 3G network the slower the 3.0?
Yeah,
whatever, whereas AT&T's been upgraded mostly to the 7.0 2 for the, at least for the iPhone 4s, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I believe so.
You know, I will say on the call quality thing, you know, I've defended AT&T. I don't know what happened yesterday, but I thought, wow, this is bad timing. They were dropping my calls left and right yesterday. So I don't know if they were working on the network in this area or what, but I'm going, this is bad timing, guys. You do not want to be messing up people's phone calls right like days before the Verizon iPhone is coming out. Right.
Well, you know, the I've actually been getting in my area, in the Rockford, Illinois area, I would say past 8 p.m., my iPhone really, really likes to switch over to Edge just randomly. Like from 8 p.m., like through the night, it does that.
How interesting.
Are they building out their network, or
have you guys been experiencing that? Or, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, because I have been known to use a metric buttload of data. I actually just checked on my wireless account before we started in December. I used like 11 gigs, and then last month I used like 15. That's not what my average is. I'm usually down around like 2.5 gigs, but I'm wondering if they might be throttling me. I'd like to hear from listeners if you guys feel like maybe they're throttling me or something like that. So feedback at wehavecommunicators.com.
You know, the one thing I think we should, I need to mention, because this is how I got out of my AT&T contract, but both these guys, Verizon and AT&T, are tweaking their plans right now, right? There's this rumor that AT&T is gonna have bumped up data plans or things like that, and maybe they'll get creative and do it in such a way that they don't befall this. But the way cellular contracts are written is if anything within your existing contract changes in terms of any of the fees, so that can be a change in, you know, SMS messaging charges, it can be a change in the taxes that they require you to pay, it can be any one of those things. They're required to notify you 90 days in advance of those changes. And the way they notify you is you have to look in the sort of legal mouse type on your bill. And because most people don't get bills now, that means you need to log in and look at the PDF, right?
Nice.
That gets delivered electronically.
Okay, that's kind of crappy. You know,
I thought they were required to text you, though. Aren't they?
If they're not, they should be.
I think they are. I'm pretty sure I heard that.
Well, regardless, this is on you. But the point is, if you want to get out of your contract without paying ETF, because they're making all these changes, there's probably, I'm just guessing, I haven't researched this yet, I'm guessing there's a good chance that something's changed on your bill within the last 90 days or is about to.
That is true. Yeah, I've actually had firsthand experience with that. So a few years ago when my mother was on T-Mobile with a just random T-Mobile phone, she wanted to get an iPhone. And we realized that because she didn't have a texting plan, and they were changing the per text charge, they were raising the fee, like doubling it to like 20 cents or whatever.
God.
There is that period where you can call them up and say, hey, you're changing my contract, I'm done.
Right.
And I did that, totally worked, no early termination fee at all. They said, I mean, it took a little bit of, you have to know about what you're talking, you know. but they did it. No ETF in it, and it works perfectly. So that is some really good advice. You know, always check over and see what kind of stuff they change. If they change something that directly affects you negatively, then I believe you're entitled to get out of your contract.
I don't even think it has to be negatively. I mean, it could be in your favor. It's just any change, because it basically voids the original contract that you signed with them. And I'm a legal expert, but that's my understanding.
Check out Consumerist.
Changing of the original terms, and so they have to renegotiate the contract with you, and you can say, well, I didn't sign up for this contract, I signed up for that one, so I want out of this one.
Yeah, if you check the Consumerist, they have regular articles about this kind of stuff, about getting out of contracts pretty easily, so just check for like Consumerist early termination fee.
And don't let the first tier support person tell you that's not true.
Yeah, it's not. They don't know what they're talking about. but yeah, you mentioned the tethering plan going up to 4 gigabytes per month. That's a rumor, I believe. On February 13th, AT&T is... Oh no, they did actually announce that. That for any of their mobile hotspot or tethering plans, they will be raising the cap from 2 to 4 gigabytes.
Are they raising it from 2 to 4, or are they just giving you a separate?
Okay, no, you're right. They're giving you're right. It's a separate 2 gigs. So it was initially you get 2 gigabytes for your Data Pro, I believe they call it.
Right.
And then if you in the past, or at least right now anyway, if you add tethering, you don't get any extra data for your tether plan. But on the 13th, they will be allowing another 2 gigs to be consumed if you get the tethering plan. So I believe that's shared between your...
Is it shared or not? That's what I want to know. And I it wasn't clear to me.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Is it a separate 2 gigs, or can I, you know, if I don't use any data on my phone, can I use the full 4 gigs for tethering or vice versa?
Okay, let me read this. In addition, also on February 13th, to bring AT&T's smartphone tethering plan in line with the AT&T mobile hotspot offer, AT&T will automatically add the additional 2 gigabytes of monthly data usage to smartphone customers already on a tethering plan at no extra charge. Customers will incur the same $20 monthly fee they're accustomed to paying, only now they'll receive an extra 2 gigabytes of data each month. So, not very specific. So, I guess even with that, it could be read either way. But I guess we'll see.
Just, I mean, why do these guys have to make it so freaking confusing? That's the thing. And why the frick do we have to cap it? And, you know, while we're at it, why are we paying $1 million a K for texting?
Oh, yeah. We shouldn't be paying anything for texting, because yeah. It's not even like text messages add anything to the overhead or bandwidth usage, because that just goes in the regular voice part. Doesn't it like take up empty space in header packets or something?
I have no idea. It's like ridiculous how much they charge you for that stuff.
So someone out there that's listening knows exactly how it works, and so they can give us all the details, and thank you when you do.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, this just goes in the text messages. They just fit into the regular part of the voice stream, and they take up empty space in some sort of packet thing that has to happen anyhow. So it's not even like they're taking up blocks of space that would be used for something else. They just drop right in line in something that takes up a fixed amount of space, no matter how much data is in there. And there you go. So yeah, there's, as far as I can tell, there's no reason why anyone should ever have to pay for a single text message.
All right, sorry. I just had to rant on that because it's just the data thing.
You pushed the right button, because I jumped right on my soapbox with that. I'm hoping
that competition would make things better, but I'm getting the sense that it's just going to make things worse. That it's going to go the opposite way. They're like, one's going to lower their cap, and then the next one's going to lower their cap, or nickel and dime their fees, and the next one's going to nickel and dime their fees. So it's like, usually competition brings, you know, good things for the consumer. For some reason, the cellular industry, it seems the exact opposite.
Yeah,
and
it's
we
very
just get
weird.
Screwed more.
Yeah. Well, did you
Sorry.
Guys? So moving on to the next thing that sucks. So I guess Apple rejected the Sony Reader application from the App Store. Now, had there been a Sony Reader application in the App Store prior to this, or was this
no.
a new submission?
This is a brand new application.
Okay, so Sony went to submit their Reader application, as you know, Amazon and Kindle have done, Barnes and Noble. And they found their application to be rejected because they did not provide a way for customers to purchase their books through in-app purchasing.
Now, just for clarification, we are all assuming, and probably rightly so, that's why it was rejected. Sony has not said why it was rejected, and I asked them, and they responded back, and they're not talking about that.
Okay, fair enough.
But that's probably exactly what it is.
Apple is actually in a separate follow-up, according to All Things Digital, they contacted an Apple representative, I believe it was Trudy Miller, responded saying that Apple has made no change to its App Store guidelines. It's simply enforcing a rule that's been in them all along. Apps that offer purchases elsewhere must support in-app purchases as well. It does seem like that's probably going to cause some issues. For example, the Amazon book, the Amazon reader, in order to actually get a book, you have to go to Safari. And because, you know, if you can't, I guess the rule is that you can't have in-app purchasing through a third-party vendor. It has to be in-app via the iTunes store. So the way they were getting around it, of course, is redirecting you to Safari for you to, you know, sign in with Amazon, do your purchases there, and then go back to the application and ta-da, your book is there. Now they're Apple is enforcing a rule stating that you have to also offer the purchase experience in the application, which is going to be, it's going to be very interesting to see how that is resolved, especially with the Amazon, the Kindle store, because they're, it does seem like they're going to have to build the actual store, the bookstore, into the application in addition to just having the reader there.
But did anybody see screenshots or see the Sony app? Because I'm wondering if this is more a point of sort of how you access the purchases. Like maybe I'm guessing the Sony app that maybe allowed you to browse the books on the app, and then when you actually said, "Oh, I want to buy this book," then it shuffled you out.
Ah, yeah,
because
yeah,
if it did that, Apple would have a problem with that. Whereas the Kindle, it's one button and you leave the whole app. It's just like if you want to go to the store, you have to go over here. But you can't.
I don't
you
know
can't
anyone.
Browse. Yeah.
Well, I don't know anyone that's actually seen the Sony app. I've seen a screenshot, and it wasn't even a screenshot of the app. It was a screenshot of the web-based bookstore in mobile Safari.
Yeah, and I don't have the Barnes & Noble app. I don't know what it if it has browsing of their bookstore in the app. But
no.
That was kind of when I was looking at the Kindle app, I thought, you know what? It's just a button that says go to the Kindle store, and it's almost just like a web link. I mean, it could have been a hyperlink. It could have been anything really simple. There isn't a quote-unquote shopping experience in the app. And I'm wondering if Sony tried to like go one step further and do like shopping and then just took the payment system outside, which I think is what Apple objects to.
I hope so, because otherwise that would create a lot of problems for many, many applications.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it would also, yeah. I mean, in addition to that, it would also mean that, you know, let's say Amazon is required to put in-app purchases in their Kindle store. Well, if they have in-app purchases, that means that 30% goes to Apple. And in that case, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to raise the price to compensate? And so the experience of purchasing within the application means that it's going to be more expensive than popping out to Safari. It'll be a really weird experience, and it makes me think that Apple is not going to push for that.
Well, I think they are going to push for that.
Okay.
And I think they'll get it. But they're not going to tell these companies you can't have the link that go or the button that goes out to mobile Safari and takes you out of the application. So that's still going to be an option.
Sure.
So if someone doesn't want to use the in-app store, they'll still have the other option. And Apple won't get 30% of the sale when someone jumps out to the web browser version. It'll only be for the in-app purchases.
And I take back what I said, because that can't be it, because I just tried the Stanza app, which I had never tried before. And it does let you browse books and has buy buttons. And when you hit the buy button, it takes you out to a browser.
Well, it's very possible that they're going to be told by Apple next time they have an update that it's not accepted because of that.
Yeah. The timing's interesting. Why would Apple suddenly now have a bee in its bonnet over this one feature?
I think it might have something to do with subscriptions.
Yeah.
Probably. good point.
Do you think we're going to be...
And probably the dozen or so Sony e-reader customers wouldn't complain as much as maybe all the Kindle owners would.
You know, have you guys heard the rumor about Apple announcing iOS 4.3 next week, along with possibly previewing the next iPad?
You know, I'm thinking that's not going to happen because, okay, so we're recording on Thursday evening.
The 3rd, yep.
The 3rd. And so if they're doing an event next week, and I believe the date was like in the middle of the week sometime.
Yeah, I
typically
think they said,
Apple would have sent out invites by tonight.
Right.
And there's no word about that. So I'm thinking that rumor is probably wrong. Now that I've said that, tomorrow morning, Apple is going to send out invites to people.
Yes. So thank you, Jeff.
So sorry to every journalist out there that just got screwed because we all went to CES. We all went to Macworld. A bunch of people then went to the daily launch a few days later. And now we're going to have to turn around and go out to Cupertino next week for this other thing. And so I apologize unreservedly.
Yeah, February 13th is the date that's rumored. So it would be a Sunday?
Oh, that doesn't make sense at all.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
No. There's no way Apple would do that.
Okay,
Who put out that rumor?
this is on Mac Rumors.
Plus, it's the day before Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't see Apple caring about anyone's romantic life.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So with that, I think you want to move on to iPhone picks. Jeff, are you ready to go with one of those?
Sure. Hold on. Let me find mine ready.
I've got mine ready.
Oh, I'm ready. So whoever you want to go first is fine.
Okay. I'm going to let Adam go because he already brought it up.
Oh.
Okay.
And my browser's crapping out. Right. But I am going to pick the L5 Universal Remote for iPhone.
Oh, that's a cool one.
So I've been waiting for this for a while, and really what put it over the top for me was the ease of getting and sort of programming the remote features. It's a little red dongle. That sounds bad. A little RF.
It's an ointment. It can clear up.
Yeah, a little RF dongle that connects into the dock port on your iPhone, and then it has a free iPhone app. Oh, and something about the app. I didn't know apps did this, but maybe it's because I haven't seen any of these, you know, dock connector accessories that have software that go with them. When I got the L5 remote thing, when I plugged it in, it said, oh, you need to download an app to support this. Would you like to do that now?
Yeah.
And then took me to the app store to get the app. I thought that was kind of cool.
That's cool.
I've not had that experience before. But it then allows you to build custom remotes for your different components. So your TV or, you know, and you can control all the buttons. It has cool little slide out drawers so you can, you know, put additional buttons inside drawers and things like that. You can really configure it however you want. It's a learning remote. So when you add a button to the interface, you can then program it by simply selecting the button and then pushing the comparable button on your real remote. They also have profiles that are already built for different components and things like that you can simply download through the app.
Nice.
You can also share those. So if somebody builds a custom remote and you like it, like a friend of yours, and you have the same components, those can be shared. And what really put it over the top for me was the fact that it supported the Apple TV.
Nice.
Too already.
Yeah. So that means
was one you had to download, but.
Means you only have to have one remote.
Yeah, and then what's cool too is each one that you save gets kind of, so you can almost have like a little, you know, a whole bunch of remotes if you'd like, but all in the one app, right? So you have one screen that might be your stereo component, and then you have another screen that might be your Apple TV, and another one that might be your DVD player, or you could put them all on one, you know, it's your choice. But say you had them set up as three different remotes, then you just swipe through left or right, you know, the remotes. But you have the one thing, you just have your iPhone, and it's like you're, you know, forget needing a Harmony remote or anything like that anymore. And I think the price on it was
$49.95.
Yeah.
Cheaper than a Harmony.
Yeah. Most things are cheaper than that.
I've never owned a Harmony remote. I know people who really love them, so we'll probably get some emails saying, well, it doesn't do this and that the Harmony remote does. But, you know, this is the kind of thing where I just have my iPhone there and just be able to control all my components. The one thing I do worry about is the little adapter is really pretty small, and I lose the remotes by my TV. And if I leave this little adapter just sitting on the table next to my, you know, my sofa, I'm sure it's going to get lost very quickly.
Yeah, a cat's going to eat it or something.
But yeah, it's really cool.
Well, you know, Michael, if your cat eats it, at least you know where to go look to find it later.
That's true.
Yeah, and it works really well. I mean, I have had it since getting back from Macworld, and it was very quick to set up my components, and it works really nicely. It's responsive on the touch and things like that. So impressive. The L5 remote, you can find it at l5remote.com.
Yep. All righty, Jeff, what is your pick?
All right, so this pick I found out about just today, thanks to John Martellaro. And it's an application called Emerald Time for the iPad. And you know how the iPad clock just kind of really floats around and it is not very accurate? And
yeah,
it doesn't reset when you sync or anything. It just, it stays wrong. So Emerald Time, what it does is when you have an internet connection, it connects to one of the atomic clock servers and tells you what the exact time is, shows you what time your iPad is saying it is, and then shows you the difference so you know how fast or how slow your clock is. Now, it can't reset the clock for you.
That'd be great.
And I'm assuming you have to jailbreak to do that.
Yeah, there probably is a jailbreak thing that'll let you do that.
There probably is. But for those people that don't jailbreak, here's this free app that will tell you what time it is, and you can hop over into the settings and reset your clock.
Nice. And it's free.
And it's free, yes.
Can I throw a tip on top of that? Because this just came up for one of my listeners. Well, two things. One, go read John's article about why this happens and the whole effect on Mac Observer. I was glad he wrote it up because I've been getting a lot of people asking about this. And it's mainly a problem, I guess, on the Wi-Fi iPads, but it can also be a problem on the 3G iPads. The difference is that 3G iPads can get the time from the cell towers.
Right.
But what a lot of people don't know is you don't have to have an active data plan to get that time. But you do have to have the cellular data turned on. So a lot of people, when they cancel their cellular data plan, turn the cellular data off. You have to flip that switch to on for about a minute, and then it will pick up the time and reset it, even if you don't have an active cellular plan. And that, of course, is if you have in the date time settings it's set to auto get the time, which is a feature only on the 3G iPad.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I did some trial and error with one of the MacCast listeners because he was asking about this, and we tried a bunch of different things, and finally we kind of discovered this by default, you know, just by trial and error. But yeah, you have to set the time, have it date time set to set automatically, and then turn on your cellular data switch for about a minute, and it should pick up the time from the cell tower.
Yeah, my iPhone's clock is a little bit off according to this, about 30 seconds off.
Well, you got to read the article because there's a reason for that too.
All right, what should I search for? What's the title of that so we can put it in the show notes?
It should be right there.
Yeah, the article is, what time is it? Your iPad may not be sure.
Is that on the homepage of Mac Observer?
Yeah, and through the magic of technology.
Oh, there it is.
I'm actually sending you the link right now.
Oh, boy. I already got it. All right, we'll put
that. We live in the future.
Yeah. Yep. All right, that'll be in the show notes, so you guys can check that out and read all about it. Okay, so my pick is... the Audible application for the iPhone. I believe it's iPhone only. Is that correct? Do you guys know? I know it's my pick. I shouldn't be asking you. So
I'm not sure.
For those who have an Audible account, it's iPhone only. This application allows you to access your entire Audible library, regardless of whether or not it's on your iPhone. So when you know when you buy books, you know Audible books on Audible.com, it saves all of your purchases in your account forever. So whenever you buy a book, you can download it to your iTunes, sync it up to your iPhone, iPod, whatever, listen to it. Cool, but you can certainly delete it from your iTunes library and download them whenever you want to again. So it saves it. It's a great feature. I love that. And so because that feature exists, the Audible application allows you to just simply have a direct connection to your Audible account whenever you want to. So if you think, if you know, you're out on the road and you're like, oh yeah, what was that? I wanted to read that one book. Download it directly to the application. And then you can listen to it right there. Of course, it has background audio, so you can, you know, jump out of the application, do other things. And it has a lot of really great features that that you don't usually get, you know, with the standard iPod player. So you can check out your entire library, download anything you want. But when you're listening, you have stuff such as, here, let me pull up what I have here. So you have 30-second skip back, which is really important for listening to audiobooks. You can actually change the setting for that. So you can change it 10, 20, 30, 90, and like I think 120-second skip back. So you can you know, change the rate at which you skip backward in your listening. It has speed control, so you can go from half speed, 1x, 2x, and 3x, which is great. You can actually have a sleep timer set up. So if you want to listen to a book while you're going to sleep, you can set it for 30 minutes and, you know, ta-da, you're listening to it and it'll shut off in 30 minutes. It has this cool thing called button free. So you don't have to actually have, you don't have to look at your screen. You can just tap and it starts playing. Swipe left, it'll rewind. Swipe vertically, it adds a bookmark. Swipe right, it swipes, it jumps forward 30 seconds, which is very cool. It's very compatible. It's a very good application. It has bookmarks built in, so you can add bookmarks to any position in the audiobook narration. It supports all the chapters. You can share things out with Facebook and Twitter if you want. Or, yeah, Facebook and Twitter, email. Let's see what else. Of course, you can't buy in the application. You have to go to the mobile site, but there is an actual mobile site, and it works quite well. I have actually purchased a book using that. It has some Foursquare style badge things, which, you know, if you want to get into that, that's cool. So you can have, you know, binge listener, marathon listener, undecider, flash 80, you know, the different goofy little badges if you want to do that. It also keeps track of your listening statistics. So it tells you how much time you've been listening for various days. So that's pretty neat. But honestly, the best part is that you have access to your entire Audible library. Download whatever you want, whenever you need to, and it even connects into your iPod library, so you can listen to Audible books that you have in your iPod already. You get access to all those extra features. And it, oh, I didn't even realize this. It actually can tell how far you've gone in your in the iPod app too. So it's very well designed, and you know what? It's free. So nice. If you have Audible, just go get it, man. It's awesome. Audible, that's what it's called. It's the Audible application in the App Store. Of course, it requires an Audible account, but it's awesome. With that, you know, of course, you can check out the iPhone picks as well as the show notes. Everything we mentioned in the show, I try to keep track of all the stuff as we go, such as the Macworld, the cool stuff found. I have links to most of that stuff will be in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. So just click on the episode. You can see all the stuff that we mentioned, all the picks, and you can comment on the episodes there. Of course, you can send feedback to us using the email address feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's on Twitter, twitter.com/jgamet, and cafepress.com/jgamet is where you can find a bunch of his wonderful drawings on various things such as shirts, coffee mugs, stuff like that. And of course, the official We Have Communicators coffee mug is at zazzle.com/jgamet, along with a bunch of other cool stuff by Jeff.
Yeah, because I have no life, so I sit around drawing things for you.
Yeah, for the listener, for you guys. Or were you saying it was for me? Was it directly for me?
Well, you and our listeners.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, thanks for being here, Jeff, as always.
Well, thanks. It's always a blast.
And Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, Twitter.com/MacCast. And, of course, the member site for the MacCast is member.maccast.com.
That's right.
Anything else you want to mention that you're working on or you want to pimp?
Nope. Mac Roundtable, still going strong. If people want to hear from a bunch of, you know, sort of a roundtable of Mac podcasters, that's always worth checking out. A lot of fun. They did a live show. I'm pretty sure they'll put the audio up for that at Macworld. And then, you know, just my Macworld coverage is out now. So all the interviews I did at Macworld just on the MacCast. So MacCast.com.
Yeah. And of course, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. But I do little reviews of things. Twitter.com/LilReviews, L-I-L reviews, is where I like to, you know, do little occasional bite-sized reviews of just, you know, pretty much everything. So movies I see, food I eat, beer I drink, all those things. Things that might be relevant. Little reviews. Or Lil Reviews, L-I-L Reviews. And yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod.
How are we going to communicate this?
It's a stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Get up.